This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show. This session shares one of the three segments of the Franklin Mass School Committee meeting held on Tuesday, November 10, 2020. The meeting was conducted in a hybrid format with some of the school committee and central office personnel in the council chambers. The remainder of the committee and the public was on the conference bridge, all to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. The meeting total runs 2 hours and 35 minutes, and I've split it into three logical segments. The first segment covers the opening through the superintendent's report, which covers the topics of the reopening status, including the testing for Franklin High School athletes and theater students to enable their return this week. That runs about 48 minutes. The second segment covers the presentation and discussion on the portrait of a graduate. That runs about 47 minutes. And the third and final segment covers the discussion action items through to the remainder of the meeting, about 60 minutes. The show notes contain links to the meeting agenda and to my notes. The meeting packet folder, also linked, will hold the superintendent's report and the portrait of a graduation presentation copy. Those are usually posted to the folder the day after the meeting. So let's listen to this third segment of the school committee meeting, November 10, 2020, covering the discussion action items in the remainder of the meeting, approximately 60 minutes.
Okay.
There's a hand raised if you're willing to take.
Sure.
There.
Oh, Steve.
Steve?
Yes. Thanks as well to the presentation, the designs, having participated in one of the focus groups. I appreciate seeing the final outputs. How best do you want citizens to provide input rather than getting inundated with a whole bunch of emails? Maybe a survey with the bullet choices or the design choices or something simple?
So I think we were going to leave it up to the school committee with respect to the design choices, and a survey had gone out related to the text. And so we have some survey results from last winter related to the text. So that was our thought process on the design.
Excellent. Thank you. Alrighty, discussion action items.
Okay. First on the only discussion action item is related to the second reading and adoption of policies. I recommend adoption of the following policies as discussed: AC non-discrimination, ACAB harassment, ACABR1 grievance procedure for complaints of harassment and discrimination, ACABR2 grievance procedure for complaints of sexual harassment under Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972, and JQA financial assistance.
Okay, I would recommend a motion for adoption of the policies just listed.
So moved.
Second?
If I wasn't a first, then I'll be a second.
Okay. Second. Any further discussion? This is a second reading. Any questions, further discussion? Okay, seeing none.
I just wanted to perhaps follow up on MJ's question about the Chromebook insurance, since it comes up in the financial assistance policy.
Oh, okay.
Now's a good time.
Oh, good, yep.
So the question came up about Chromebook insurance, and just to sort of set the stage, the Chromebook insurance has been something that's been in place at the high school for some time, and the policy came forward with an adjustment to adjust the optional Chromebook insurance service for free and reduced lunch for families who qualify for free and reduced lunch in order to provide them with the optional insurance, but at a reduced rate based on that qualification. It was offered to our K-8 families in an email yesterday, and it's optional. And the description of what types of things it covers was in there. And I guess perhaps we could have set the stage a little bit differently or a little bit better with the new Chromebooks. There have been a couple different conversations with the budget subcommittee, and I think with the policy subcommittee about Chromebook insurance. But the Chromebooks are, property of the Franklin Public Schools, and similar to a textbook or other materials that may be borrowed by students. I think also to about instruments or athletic uniforms. There is kind of a responsibility that people take on to take care of our equipment. There's a policy that speaks to that. So the Chromebooks fall into that same sort of bucket. And I had responded earlier today that while we encourage families to take our Chromebook because how we manage the device, does add to some safety for students and ensures that the platform on Chrome has the necessary extensions and apps and all of that. So while we encourage them to have our Chromebooks, if the student has an individual device at home that is reliable, they can use that for remote learning, and Chromebooks can be in school for use during the day. But we do encourage them to take them home, and would encourage the Chromebook because the Chromebook insurance, because the coverage does protect against damage for a number of incidents that may happen just kind of naturally over the course of its life. So had kind of explained that, but happy to explain it again for everybody's background info.
Thank you. Well, can I ask a question?
Sure, go ahead.
I just have a question.
Sure.
So if someone does bring their personal Chromebook into school and something happens to it, is the school liable in any way? Like, can the parents come back and say, oh, my kid slipped on the stairs and they were slippery and the Chromebook broke?
I don't think so. I think that they're sort of assuming a risk by bringing that into the school.
Thank you.
Okay. So we have a motion. We have a second. And so I am going to any further discussion. So seeing none, the vote will come on the motion to adopt those policies. I will start with Jen.
Yes.
Tim.
Yes.
Judy.
Yes.
Mary Jane.
Yes.
Denise.
Yes.
Elise.
Yes.
And Ann. Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
Right. Discussion only, Dr. Ahern.
Sure. So in response to some comments from the committee, I had refashioned the superintendent's report to put more of a status update together for your awareness in terms of some of the big matters that we're thinking about and grappling with as it relates to reopening schools, as well as for your input related to the format of that status update going forward. So in there, I have listed for you the health metrics with the past 3 weeks of data, and then I broke down some of the major issues that we're facing into the areas that the reopening task force and the monitoring team, how we have been organizing our work. So related to teaching and learning, digital learning and technology, whole child supports, personnel, and health and safety. And then I thought I would start a list on the bottom. Certainly this is not all inclusive. There have been other recently resolved issues and many resolved issues going back into the past, but just wanted to highlight the most recent at the bottom so we can kind of keep track. In this status update, I think in the area of teaching and learning, the two big pressing things for the school department are transfer requests. So we have sent a communication out related to families who may want to come into the hybrid learning setting from remote only, or go in K to five remote only through the Virtual Learning Academy. So we're collecting those at this time, and then based on the numbers, we'll make some plans and adjustments, if we have small numbers in each grade, we should be able to make those adjustments fairly easily. But if we have large swings from hybrid to VLA or vice versa, that will present a bit of a larger challenge based on how we've allocated classrooms and staffing. So a little bit of a wait and see to see how many requests we get. We have been certainly thinking about the kindergarten and grade one matter. And I think I'm going to say need rather than desire. I'm picking my words carefully related to kindergarten and grade one with respect to instruction. And following the last school committee meeting, had a discussion with elementary principals about, you know, kind of initially, what are some reactions and thoughts on what it would take to be full and in person for kindergarten and grade one. We did the feasibility study last summer and recognized that we could do full and in person at 3 feet, but not 6 feet. There's just a big issue, and it depends on the school, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. Might be space, or it might be staffing, or both.
Yeah.
One of the points that I would make that, and it's not universal, but many of the communities to which we're compared are a lot smaller than Franklin and have only one school in the pre-K to two grade span. Mm-hmm. So for them to be able to bring all of their kindergarten and grade one in is a bit easier. There are some larger districts who are doing it, and we're reaching out and learning from them. But across our six schools, it's a bigger undertaking. And there's a lot of variability among those schools. The classrooms at DT, Kennedy, and Parmenter are smaller and don't accommodate as many students. DT in particular, some of those classrooms with a 6 feet of distancing can only accommodate 8 students. And there's not a lot of alternative spaces to spread kids out in. The complex schools have classrooms that are more like 12, can fit more like 12 students at 6 feet of distancing. Some districts are pursuing using distance requirements that are less than 6 feet, somewhere between 3 and 6. That is going to certainly increase the identification of close contacts should there be a positive COVID case in one of those classrooms. So it's just an implication and something to be aware of. What we haven't pursued as much, but are still gathering information on, is the implications of half day for kindergarten and grade one. What we would anticipate would be some scheduling shifts would need to happen, particularly with specials, and then a spillover effect on transportation. And we still have to kind of work to see what those implications would be. So we are working on it and we are looking at it. I think we're also thinking about it kind of more broadly as well, beyond grades K and one, but those are some responses and answers I have for you tonight, and we'll keep this on the radar screen. You can see some updates related to digital learning and technology on laptops and bandwidth. Personnel is one of our biggest areas of ongoing concern and pressure points. Some of it's just having enough staff to supervise students. We're having trouble filling some of our positions, particularly substitute teachers and activity monitors and ESPs who want to work in an in-person physical setting. I think what we're seeing now is more and more of our staff are being, it's being suggested by their physician to stay out if their child is sick, get tested themselves if their child is sick. And so we're seeing an increase in the number of like quarantines and testing among personnel that may or may not be related to an actual COVID case, but is something that the medical professionals are suggesting. And so it's something that we're having to navigate. Staff stress and well-being continues to be a concern. We have received a few positive emails related to last week's PD and just having time to plan in this environment. And then the last piece is around health and safety. We already talked about the Halloween party, so I'll skip that. Governor Baker, we're adjusting to some of his latest orders, and mask breaks are still permitted, even though mask wearing has been more reinforced and stressed by the governor. And then we're keeping COVID communications on the list as we think about strengthening our COVID communications. I've reached out to other districts to understand more about their communication methods and who they communicate with. And I will say that it varies. Some do more than we do and some do less. And I've registered for a legal webinar on staff and student privacy during COVID, just to make sure that we're guided well. So if you have any questions and or input and feedback on this format, be happy to hear that.
For sure. Let's start, Jen. Any questions, feedback, comments?
I guess just a clarifying question. So the K and first graders, they are in person two, asynchronous two. What are their asynchronous days completely independent? Are they doing a morning meeting? What does that piece look like?
So grades K and one are hybrid 2 days a week. Wednesday, everybody is remote. And then the other 2 days a week, half of them are at home while the other half are in person. And what we have done, the expectations that we've established with teachers for the days, like those remote days, would be a morning meeting in the morning and a closing circle in the afternoon, and then multiple points of engagement throughout the day. The teacher can decide when those multiple points of engagement would be. For example, beginning lesson before reader's workshop, and then the students would break up into some smaller groups, and the students in person would do reader's workshop, and the students at home would do reader's workshop. So there's multiple points of engagement throughout the day, which I think is a little, some of the feedback that we've heard from families is that that can be a little difficult to navigate, particularly with the kindergarten and grade one student, but that the student kind of comes in and goes. Anecdotally, I've heard from a few families, and I think this is something that that I'd be interested in getting more information and data on. I've heard that there's some variability in terms of that synchronous versus asynchronous time. Some families are saying that there's not enough synchronous time and the student is largely independent and as a kindergarten or grade one student can't really navigate that. On the other hand, I've also had families share that there's just a lot of screen time for their young student. And so I think we kind of need to wrap our arms around a little bit kind of what the experience is. But the expectations are morning circle, closing circle, and then multiple points of engagement throughout the day. Excuse me.
And then I think my only other question is, have we explored any other options for spacing?
We are looking at options for spacing. I think one of the things that I would put out on the table is that we would need to be creative with spacing in order to accommodate the K and one students full and in person, which may include students not being in their homeschool environment and being in an alternative space. That might be the only way we would be able to fit it, but I can come back to the committee with more definitive answers on that.
Thanks.
All set?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, Tim?
Yes, so I'll leave my comments mainly just to, like, the formatting and the communication. So I like that it captures what it seems like it's capturing. The document is kind of the key focus areas. Hopefully it doesn't feel too redundant with the superintendent's report. If there are things in particular where you feel like there's really, you know, key open questions where we're just having a hard time getting past it, that I think would be helpful for us as a school committee to be able to pull out of that. And so I don't know if it's like, you know, open questions related to particular topic areas or not, but, you know, to the extent that we run into any you know, barriers to solving some of those problems that are outlined in that document, that I think would be helpful to highlight to us.
Okay, great. That's helpful.
Yeah. Judy?
All set.
Okay, thanks, Judy. Mary Jane?
I'm good.
Good. Denise?
Yes, thank you.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So I guess I have some questions that kind of fall under whole child supports. I've heard from a lot of high school parents and families that they feel as though the screen time is very high because not only are they spending all day on screens doing, you know, at school, but then after school, they're spending hours on the screen. You know, I know that, you know, my son who's in fourth grade, they don't have homework. Is anyone looking at maybe how much screen time high schoolers have right now and monitoring, make sure that they're not spending as much time in front of a screen?
Yeah, I think we're hearing some of the same things from high school families in terms of the amount of screen time at the high school. I do think that when we end up in hybrid, that will adjust a bit. Mm-hmm. Kind of naturally, but I do think that it's, you know, between that and also some stress, quite a bit of stress that we're hearing from our high school students, those are things that we're looking at.
Okay. And then there have been some teachers who've had to take sick time to catch up on their work. Are we planning anything? How can we work with teachers to give them the time they need to catch up on, you know, work, building lessons plans, etc.? You know, I know that we talk about how, you know, staff are stressed. I know there's only so much we can do. I'm just worried that we're going to have a lot of burnout soon.
I think we're all worried about the burnout factor among staff. I'm not aware of any who have taken sick days for that purpose. We are trying to use meeting time and professional development time and provide asynchronous time on Wednesday afternoons in order to facilitate more time for teachers to do that planning. I would encourage, and I think there is some good dialogue happening between teachers and their principal and assistant principal, and the principal and assistant principal are kind of feeding that information up to us. Mm-hmm. So that dialogue and that communication, you know, is really helpful. And I think we're trying to find those relief valves. One of the things that that I would note is I think that the teachers are being really hard on themselves. And when I speak with them, I just see the expectations that they've heaped upon themselves. And through those conversations and through that dialogue, we may be able to help, maybe help them just like through that connection, help them through it. Mm-hmm. I think we're also, it's been kind of run as fast as you can since the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. But I am hopeful that we get to a point in time where we are working a little smarter rather than harder and using a team-based approach to planning, for example. I was thinking about this when we had the digital learning integration specialist presenting, and one kindergarten teacher is doing a video on F, and you know, can one teacher do a video on B, and can another teacher do a video on T, and then they share the videos, so not everybody is kind of doing everything. But I think that takes a measure of coordination that we have not quite gotten to because we've just been running as fast as we can. That would be another thought.
Is there any discussion between districts to see what's working best for everyone? I know that, you know, some districts, they're like, we're doing so amazing with remote learning and hybrid. And it's like, well, what are you doing that's so amazing? Like, I know that the superintendents meet a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of conversations among job alike groups. I think the assistant superintendents are also getting together. One group I'm not sure about is how much principals are able to reach out to other principals and talk. That might be something to look into because I think our job alike groups are really active, but I'm not sure about that.
Thank you.
All set?
Yes.
Elise?
Hi, thanks. Sarah, I'm just looking at the numbers, especially for VLA kindergarten and second grade. The numbers are really high. So if there's a number of hybrid kiddos that want to transfer, there's families want them to transfer to remote, like, what's the tipping point, I guess? And can you remind us of the class size guidelines?
Sure. So I think that the grade two is pretty full. So I think they're at the tipping point. And I would even say that I think kindergarten is at the upper, is beyond the school committee guidelines for K. I think the school committee guidelines for K are 18 to 22. And then that would be grades K through two. And then grades three through five are 22 to 25. And so that those are two areas that we do have concerns about. We have some additional paraprofessional support in both kindergarten and grade two in order to help offset the high class sizes and be able to break the groups into some smaller instructional settings. But those are two areas of concern with respect to the transition. So we're at this point not making any decisions, but those are certainly areas that we're watching very closely and very carefully. Conversely, there are a couple of sections, and the school committee doesn't have all of the cohort information, but in terms of the hybrid sections, there are a couple of places where the cohorts are full based on the classroom. And the grade level. Many of our classrooms, or most of our classrooms, may have a couple of seats in them, and we could accommodate somebody from the VLA in the hybrid setting, but there are sections that we can't accommodate and would have to need the time, which is one of the reasons why we're asking for families to make the request now, is to give us some time to make some adjustments and think creatively.
Right. I can only imagine it's like a moving puzzle with all the pieces and constantly changing. You just hope that, you know, five want VLA and five want hybrid, and it sort of evens out. But of course, life doesn't work that cleanly. So I guess just keep updated. When is the end of that, the deadline for families requesting to move to transition?
We're asking for the request this week. With the deadline of Friday, and then we will make the change at the trimester, which is in, which is December 11th is the end of the first trimester.
Okay. So we'll get an update then. Thank you.
Well said, Elise. Good. I just had two quick questions. Sarah, for just to clarify, it says to get kindergarten and first graders back even at half time, half day, it says implication transportation. What, when you say that, is that budget? Is it safety? What, can you just clarify for when it says that transportation would be an implication in that?
So Miriam can jump in and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's both a logistics piece as well as a budget implication. So we would have to run a midday run for kindergartners to go home, as well as for kindergartners to come to school, which would add busing to the fleet. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we would need to add buses, Miriam. I don't even know if there are buses that could be added, or if we could use current buses. But these are all questions that we would have to look into.
If I may.
Yeah, go ahead.
I would just add to that yes, there may in fact be a need for more buses, and I'm not sure that those buses would be available at this point in time. I would also say that there are budgetary implications, because there will be a cost for a midday run if that were the case. And I would need to know, you know, if we were bringing all the K and one students back, we would need to know how many that would be interested in transportation to be able to identify how many would need busing. So thank you.
Okay. And then I just had one other question. Do we have enough resources for mental health? You know, we look at, we just brought in digital learning integrations, which is really important for the technology piece, but mental health is surfacing as a huge, just out of curiosity in terms of budget and what we can do to support. I was just curious if we feel that, given the needs out there, that we have enough outreach and we have enough resources in that department.
I'm going to invite Paula.
I'm sort of looking at Paula.
I know, she's looking at me.
I'm looking at Paula.
She looks like she wants to say something. I'm happy to chime in.
Because Paula knows everything, so I think.
Oh, please.
Yes.
There's never enough resources, yeah. Right, for social emotional. You know, we're lucky now that we have our school adjustment counselors at all the elementary schools. We increased, in fact, we had one that was 0.7 at Parmenter that's been increased to a 1.0, so that's been very useful. You know, we have our project or interface through William and James that we've been reaching out to. I think, you know, like I said, we could always use more help.
Yeah.
I think, you know, most of the outside resources such as Riverside and U Inc, you know, they're having staffing issues as well.
Yeah.
So from, you know, we don't have our U Inc partnership in Parmenter due to COVID health and safety precautions. So, I mean, our counselors are reaching out to home providers. They're reaching out to all our usual resources, but we could always use more help.
Okay. Yeah. I was just curious. It just seems that when we sort of looking to the budget and we begin to make these considerations, what our priorities are going to be. So that's right. Helpful to know.
If I could add too, we've also seen where in the past where a mobile crisis unit might be able to come to the school or to a home, they have some restrictions and policies that they have in place around visiting due to COVID. So that's created an additional barrier and challenge. And the second piece I would mention as part of the substance abuse task force work is our partnership with SAFE Coalition to help provide our counselors working with students with additional support with specifically with substance abuse mm-hmm. prevention and treatment. So we're looking at ways in which we can kind of stretch and partner. And to Paula's point, we can always use more support, but we're trying to leverage every partnership and collaborative partner we have out there to make that happen.
On November 3rd, our counselors did get together to discuss our resources, you know, and provided other resources to each other that they've been using, you know, and I gave some links that I had from different job-alike groups as well throughout the Commonwealth. So I think we're all pitching in, but we're all in the same place where, you know, COVID restrictions are really impacting the meeting the needs of some of our students, because even home providers, personal providers aren't, telehealth doesn't work for all kids
mm-hmm.
and parents are struggling and they'd rather just cancel than do telehealth because they're not finding it useful. So again, the more we can get our students in the building, the better. And our, you know, even if it's appointment only with our counselors, it's better. At least we can have that face-to-face time.
Absolutely. That's so important. Thanks, Paul. Thank you. Just going back, committee, anyone else that wanted to add a comment or? Oh,
Jen.
Jen, go ahead, Jen.
Yeah, just to kind of piggyback on what you just said, I know last year there was a lot of work around themed months and around the social emotional competencies. Is that still happening?
Yes. It's a great question, and thanks for asking. We are continuing. Our SEL committee met last week, and not only do we have those competencies, but this year what we our plan is, and based on some feedback from teachers and from this committee, was around how are we assessing students' needs. And we began that work to start the year, but the idea is how can we help support teachers and students in understanding what each student's needs are as it relates to the CASEL competencies and building those skills, and then providing, instead of looking at it month by month in a linear fashion, try to provide supports that specifically address each of those skill areas. So if you identify students who struggle with self-management, we're trying to now shift to here are strategies that work to help address that, and then pair that with the parent strategies that complement that to help a student who's been identifying that area. And another layer of that, if you were to kind of look at it across tiered levels of support, what works for all kids and what are best practices, which builds off of what we did last year with the competency of the month, but this year trying to look a little deeper. How do we get more targeted supports for kids who need those? So I appreciate the question, and I think it's leading to the next evolution of what we need to see in supporting students across the district.
Yeah, and I think just to kind of piggyback off that, Lucas, I think your website that you launched last year is a lot of meaningful things for families, and I would encourage them to revisit that. I happen to be revisiting myself today, and I think there's a lot of great resources out there that people may not know about that you might want to just kind of give a little heads up to.
Thank you, and we intend to go and revisit those resources for families, take a fresh look at those, and then put those out again and re-communicate those, right?
We're going to keep refreshing that website through other resources that our BCBAs have found, as well as statewide resources that are out there that are being developed. So,
any other committee members? No. So at this time, we certainly encourage public comment. Just to remind people that we're not going to be engaging in dialogue. We want to hear what you have to say. If you'd like to comment on anything relative to the reopening plan, rather. But we just ask, please, if you limit it to no more than 3 minutes, because we want to make sure that everyone has a chance to be heard who wishes to speak. So at this point, I'm going to see if there's anyone who wishes to make a public comment. And I'm going to ask Denise if you can help me.
Angela Snyder has her hand
Angela,
raised.
Yes, Angela Snyder, go ahead.
Now, waited patiently. I really appreciate the comments made by Dr. Ahern, and I know that I've reached out a number of times, and I'm going to try very hard not to cry as I talk about this, because this has been a challenge. I have a first grade daughter who is, we're just struggling. We're struggling with she's hybrid 2 days a week, but we're two working parents. And the process that's been set up so far, it only works if one of the parents or a caretaker can work as a teacher to make the learning, to facilitate the learning. If both parents are working and don't have someone sitting there with a child facilitating the learning, those children don't have equal access to education right now. I feel like, you know, in the days I'm on calls and I can't be right there, my daughter falls behind. And certainly the teachers have been wonderful. And I recognize this is a very, very difficult situation. I really appreciate all of the health and safety efforts that the district is making. I understand why, the reasons why. I just want to ask again, because I have tried to make it work and it's not improving for these kids. And I think the options left to parents are to send a child out into the community to go have a third party care for them and try to bring them through the process, which in some ways feels to me like we're just actually making the exposures for COVID purposes even higher if we're doing that. Or you bring someone into your home in the middle of a pandemic who's a stranger and you can't control what they're doing. It's like, I feel like the options left here aren't great. And I recognize everybody's struggling and this is hard. I have three children. The older two are making it work. We're making it work. It's not ideal, but we're really left with our first grader feeling like she's not getting equal access to education. So just wanted to make that impact known, know that it's still an ongoing issue, and know how much we'd appreciate any efforts that can be made to bring that group back in person. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Anyone else?
William, I'm going to butcher his last name, Ertl.
Okay.
Just have to unmute.
Oh, I think he's muted.
Okay, let's start that.
Can you hear me now? Sorry.
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that. So, you know, I want to echo, I also have a young student, a first grader, going through similar issues. What I would fundamentally ask the committee to potentially take an action on is to review what it looks like for these very young learners, these non-readers, these non-writers, going through on asynchronous learning or even synchronous but remote learning. We get a schedule that is a slide deck from the teachers who are doing their best to teach in class and remotely at the exact same time. But it's a slide deck with text that my first grader can't read. He can't bring himself through that class on his own. So without my wife or I stopping our professions to sit in the room with them, it can't happen. And even when we do take the time and arrange our work schedules to try to be able to facilitate education, the schedules don't sync. We have break times listed during class times. It's just not a consistent message. It's not a consistent path. So I think it would be good for the committee to get a little bit more visibility into specifically what it looks like for these students right now. And then more fundamentally on the return to school, I have to say, as a parent and as a as a citizen of the community, I'm really concerned and frankly disappointed that it's November and we're talking about getting options for return to school. The Massachusetts Department of Education released 3 feet as the minimum requirement for social distancing within schools in August. I'm struggling that we don't have multiple options, pros and cons to those options, for weight within the committee and then potentially within the community. We just passed an election time period. We could have put an emergency ballot question to the community this past week to discuss this. You know, should we be putting our youngest students back in, who are falling further and further behind, and will have periods of their education they will never be able to get back, right? I mean, we have to fundamentally agree that this is not something they'll make up in 6 months. It is something that will forever impact their ability to learn long term. So I just really can't stress how much we need to see what those options are and make good, sound decisions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that you can see? Public comment? Oh, I see a hand, but I'm not sure.
Megan Benson.
Okay.
Oh, you're muted.
Let me restart.
Sorry about that.
No, it's okay.
So I 100% agree with what Will Ertl just said, for sure. And I apologize because I missed the beginning of these comments, but I got logged out and I had to log back in. But my thing as a parent, I also am I have a first grader and a kindergartner, and it's completely just unsustainable right now with how this remote learning model is. I see that they thrive in school. They don't, in the remote setting. And just from a non-medical point of view, like as a mother who of course is concerned about the, risk of exposure that my children have in school, or even, exposing the teachers and staff and all of that. But given the fact that my girls right now are in cohort A, they go to school, the teacher is the main contact. And again, to preface this, I realize we don't know exactly, how to define a close contact or any of that, supposedly, but the teacher is teaching both cohorts, and there's children that are in both cohorts. So as a parent, I don't feel the risk of an increased amount of days for my girls, is anymore. I don't think increasing the amount of days that my girls go to school would increase their exposure to coronavirus significantly. And I don't even know if I could argue if it, would for the teachers or staff or not, given the fact that the teacher is teaching the same kids in the same cohorts, there's kids within the same cohorts, germs are being spread no matter what, we're wearing masks, all of that. So I think given that, as well as the fact that the desks could be spaced 3 feet apart, given the fact that other districts, surrounding districts next to us, larger districts, I realize that we're large, but we do also have 6 different elementary schools. I think I really, really hope that we could try to get creative and figure out ways to do this. Because again, just, going on the sentiment of it's failing the youngest learners. And I think we're going to have, further implications from there.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that you can see, Denise?
Jackie?
Hi.
Go ahead.
I had spoke at the last school board meeting, and I've sent several emails also. So I just want to reiterate what the folks before me have mentioned. I have kindergartners, twins, so 2 kindergartners, a 7th grader, and a 4th grader. And I can see how, although it's not perfect, the hybrid model can work for the older kids. But it's just simply not working for kindergartners and their families, especially, you know, working parents or any parent who has a younger child at home. As other people have mentioned, this is a full day's responsibility on a parent. So in the course of a 1 hour time frame, my girls could have two sessions that they need to log in. They can't read a slideshow. So when something says click here, they can't do that. So I have to click and open. I have to click to close. I have to go back to the slideshow and click the next item. So I've kept a spreadsheet over the course of many school days, and the average is every 13 minutes, I'm clicking something on computers for my kids, and I'm also conducting my corporate job. So this, I mentioned in the last meeting that, like, I really would suggest a survey of families, because I know in public forums where this has been brought up, so many parents have really good ideas of things that would make this better. More days in school would obviously make this much better, but there's so many other things that just parents who are living through this every day suggest that would make this better. And to just get out there and ask and really, like, survey these kindergarten parents and first grade parents to see how these days are going educationally, psychologically, for the kids. I think, like, a lot of data needs to be brought in, besides just the the virus numbers and the distancing and all of those suggestions, you know, to get a real full picture of how this is actually going in the homes.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. Thank you. Anyone else? Because we want to make sure we have give everybody a chance.
It says Arthur's iPhone.
Is that someone?
I can't tell what you said.
It says Arthur's iPhone. He has his hand up.
Okay, go ahead. Arthur's iPhone.
He might be muted.
Unmute. I got to start. Stop. Reset. Unmute Arthur's iPhone.
Maybe
inadvertent.
Maybe he didn't mean to raise his hand.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Very good.
I don't see anyone else.
All right. Appreciate all the comments.
Actually, can I make a comment? I didn't want to cut anyone off from the community.
Jen, go ahead.
Yeah, is there an option, Dr. Ahern, for you to put forth a couple of proposals and solutions that we may be able to entertain to get our K and first graders in full time? And just, you know, similar to the DT analysis where we looked at some different options and then whether they were viable or not. It might be helpful for us to kind of see some options if there are options. And go ahead.
We can work towards putting together, and I think that's, you know, part of the status update is, you know, kind of what we've done since the last one. And we're continuing to look at it and can pinpoint with more specificity what some options would be and implications for you.
Yeah, because I think just the K and one, I understand everyone mm-hmm. their students in 4 days, but I do think, and I agree with the callers who all kind of contributed, that educationally this is not sound. I mean, we're talking about kids who can't read, so how are they supposed to navigate their day when they can't even understand the words on their screen? So I do think that there is a severe concern with those K and one students, and if we can look, and you know, it may have other implications for different grades. You know, it might look differently for other grades, but I do think that those K and one students are a priority at this point.
Okay, all set. Any other committee members before we move on? Okay. Moving on to information matters. And it's this time when there's reorganization that committees if there's going to be changes. So I think we're all pretty much involved in ongoing work in all of the subcommittees. The only one that would end, the ad hoc superintendent evaluation, we're doing some good work on that, and we'll be doing presenting the evaluation at the next meeting. But that is an ad hoc one, which would end, and then a new one would be appointed. But I think we're all set, and everyone's sort of ongoing in the work that we've been doing. Is that how it goes? Yeah, I just wanted to make sure. So, budget update. We did not meet budget subcommittee since last time. However, just to remind everyone, we do have a budget workshop for the committee next Tuesday at 6 o'clock. Would be lasting approximately 90 minutes. And again, just to reiterate, it's a chance for Dr. Hearn and Miriam to give us a budget update where we stand now. We would have a chance there to share our priorities. We can also need to determine what information in an open, transparent way. We want to make sure that we get out to the public. We've been giving out fact sheets every year around budget time. We may want to look at that and see what information do we want to continue to get out. Are there things we want to add to make sure that the public is aware and fully involved in the budget process? So again, that workshop is next week, just as a reminder. Mm-hmm. Community relations?
Sure. So community relations, there's no meetings on the calendar just yet. Franklin Ed Foundation is meeting this Thursday. This past Saturday was the MASC annual delegate assembly. There were over 125 members in attendance. Prior to the annual meeting, there was a special keynote event on equity and cultural proficiency presented by Dr. Khalees Wernham, who was amazing. Oh my gosh, she was, I can't say enough good things about her. Let's see, during the assembly, 9 of the 10 resolutions that we discussed here were passed. Resolution 10, relative to the monitoring of attendance of students during the pandemic, was tabled. There was some disagreement over the language in paragraph 4. So when I hear an update, I'll let everyone know. And Friday was the second in a series of MASC learning luncheons. The topic was the school committee superintendent relations. It was very informative and now more critical than ever. When the presentation and slides are available, I will forward them along to your attention.
Thank you. I just wanted to say thank you for the newsletter. I'm getting that out, and Anne Marie also.
Oh, thank Anne Marie.
The format it's so easy to read, but I know you pulled it all together and you sort of made it really look good. So thank you. It was good. Thank you for that. MJ, policy?
We have a meeting this Thursday at 6 o'clock.
Elise, any facilities analysis update?
You know it. It's sort of long. We've been busy. So we met on October 29th and reviewed the role of the subcommittee after the Castle Boots presentation, which recommended closing more schools than only DT. We reviewed the policy that outlines the steps that are required to retire a school facility. We reviewed our established process, and we agreed that our job as assigned is to continue to complete a comprehensive closing study of DT and DT alone. It's up to the school committee to decide on next steps as related to developing a broader master plan that includes the other school facilities. We held our second community information session last week to review our process, highlight key points of the comprehensive facilities analysis report, outline our next steps, and engage the community. I want to say thank you to everyone who attended. There were about 30 people total on the call. To outline our next steps here, we've begun stage one, phase two. We've started gathering perspectives from staff, families, and community members related to the potential closing of DT. Our questionnaire was disseminated through the school committee newsletter, the Town of Franklin blog, FPS Facebook, and Twitter, and it went out to the school community via the regroup emails. There are printed copies available in the municipal building lobby, and it will be sent to senior center members as well. Questionnaire will be open until December 2nd. As far as the timeline goes, we aim to finish gathering information this winter, and then we will have all the data to move to stage two and evaluate options. We'll be able to recommend options for a school committee vote, which is stage 3, after we've completed evaluating our options. We're working on scheduling our next meeting, and we may even make an appearance on the Franklin Matters podcast in the near future. If Steve Sherlock has his way. I'll keep you posted on that.
Thanks, Elise. The community awareness session was so well done. It was just, you made it all so understandable, and it was so beautifully presented. So that was excellent. Joint PCCs, Judy?
I do have, we had our first meeting on October 27th. Sarah spoke on the focus of the district for this year and also into improving goals and a continuation of what our district has been doing in the past. Sarah also spoke on the Virtual Learning Academy, and there's about 250 students from all of the elementary schools that are doing this at this point in time. There was questions arose from the PCC members relative to how to get parents for VLA Virtual Learning Academy students involved, and fundraising for the PCCs, who pays for the field trips for the kids, et cetera, et cetera. The high school PCC head noted that they had a virtual meeting in early October and had over 40 parents virtually present. Sarah suggested that the PCC individuals should look at the facilities report on all of the schools on the school department website. Our next meeting will be the afternoon meeting on Wednesday, November 24th, before the school committee meeting. Meetings vary, either a morning meeting or a late afternoon meeting, so the most number of PCC attendees can be present. That's it. Thank you.
Thanks, Judy. Substance Abuse Task Force.
So our committee, our task force met on October 27th, and our next meeting is on November 24th. We used the first meeting as an organizational meeting to really reflect on our current state and make some determinations on what we should pause, what we should carry forward, and what should we initiate as new as a result of kind of where we're at with our circumstances. So we broke up into small groups in breakout sessions. Each subcommittee had a chance to provide feedback on the work that we had finished and completed at the end of the year. And we have our next meeting will be to set those goals in place and then start to identify the action steps we'll take throughout the year to move that work forward.
Thank you. How about school wellness advisory? I don't know if one of you wants to, you or Elise, did you both attend? You both attend.
We did both attend. It was what?
November 4th.
Okay.
It was the day after the election?
Yes. Yeah, at 8 o'clock in the morning. Yes.
Yeah.
It's all coming back to you.
Yep, it is. Yes. we met. We broke out into our little breakout groups. I thought it was a really good first meeting. I'm excited for the next one. I think we have a lot of work ahead of us. You know, Elise works in the physical education portion. I'm in the mental wellness. So. And Anne Marie joined. She's going to be in communications. So
good.
I'm excited for the work ahead.
Excellent. Good. Thank you. And social and racial justice, the community group that we just make sure that we just want to be part of the discussion, the schools, because it is a community-wide issue. Did not meet this past, since the last committee. So I will keep you, we'll keep you informed on the conversations and discussions that happen at that meeting. And I think I covered all of the those committees. All right, we go on to new business. Dr. Hearn.
At the next meeting, we will come back looking for the Portrait of a Graduate adoption. And I think at this point, some things that we had planned have been deferred, including the evaluation. Mm-hmm. So I'll talk with the chair about reviewing the presentation schedule to make sure that we kind of reset going forward.
Sure. Good. Consent agenda.
I recommend approval of the minutes from the October 27th, 2020 school committee meeting as detailed. I recommend approval of the executive session minutes from the October 27th, 2020 school committee meeting as detailed to be released. I recommend acceptance of a check for $300 from the Franklin Cultural Council for supplemental curriculum materials for the Solutions Program as detailed. And I recommend acceptance of a check for $61.85 from Campus Box Media LLC for supplemental supplies for FHS athletics as detailed.
Okay. Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Second. Okay. Any discussion? Okay, seeing none, the vote will come on the motion. All those in favor of adopting the consent, approving the consent agenda, roll call. Jen D'Angelo? Is she nodding? Yeah. Tim? Tina?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Judy Ponfeffer? Yes. Mayor Jane Schofield?
Yes.
Denise Spencer?
Yes.
Elise Stokes?
Yes.
And Ann Bergen, yes. Motion. Consent agenda carries. Payment of bills, I did review them and they are in order. And Jen, will you continue doing payroll for us?
I would love to, Ann. Thank you.
Okay.
Payroll is in order.
Okay. Thank you. And we have no executive session today. So I think that concludes. So at this point, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
And a second.
Second.
Okay, any further discussion? I don't think so. So the vote will come on the motion to adjourn. And again, roll call. Jen D'Angelo.
Yes.
Tim Keenan.
Yes.
Judy Ponfeffer.
Yes.
Mayor Jane Schofield.
Yes.
Denise Spencer.
Yes.
Elise Stokes.
Yes.
And Ann Bergen, yes. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.